Welcome back to another episode of CyberStar Talks podcast. I am Ayona. As always, I am so thrilled you're spending your precious time with me and my honored guest. Today's guest is Andrea Isoni. Andrea is a physicist and PhD from Imperial College, former Founders Factory and Chief AI Officer at AI Technologies, a company specialized in AI and automation. He's a committee member for AI in ISO standards and former advisor of Antler Venture Capital. Andrea has created a very insightful AI newsletter with 2,400 subscribers. Sharing his deep insights into AI, he launched his book named Machine Learning for the Web, which is specifically written to help data scientists understand complex AI technologies in simple and clear terms. The book has been translated into multiple languages, including English, Chinese, and Korean, with more than 10,000 copies sold. Andrea is a renowned international speaker in different cities across the world, including London, New York, Dubai, Frankfurt, Saudi Arabia. Andrea, what a pleasure to have you on CyberStar Talks podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Andrea, as an AI expert, I would like to ask you, what is AI for you in this moment, beyond its historical roots or our future potentials?
Okay, at this very moment in time, AI is simply a software, very capable one, but it's still a software, and all its aim, actually role in society, is to execute tasks and reducing human time, essentially, and helping human to be more efficient in their life. Essentially, it's an efficient tool.
Why do we label certain systems or tools as artificial intelligence nowadays? I mean, all modern software have some level of intelligence, but what sets these new AI tools apart?
So the reason why we call it artificial intelligence, by the way, obviously there are some, they claim they are, but they are not, and this is true. But the real one, they are called that way because there is an ability to generalize. So the ability to generalize is not present in any other type of software, but it's specific of artificial intelligence software. What I mean by that is the ability to give answers. AI software has the ability to give answer that is not predefined, is not in the training data, but again, it's generalized. Quick example, let's say in the training data, the AI object detection saw a pear and a red apple, yeah? Mm-hmm. Now, let's say if live, when it goes live, you see an apple, but the apple is green, yeah? So it never saw he saw a red apple, but never saw a green apple. If the AI correctly identify as a apple, although it's green, then you will say generalized well, as in this AI model never saw a green apple, but yet it was able to correctly identify it. That's what means generalization, and that's what essentially the new power of software, really, able to generalize, which means able to understand things never seen before.
Is this kind of prognosis or extrapolation of data that is happening in the background? I mean,
neither. In a way, AI neural network are able to extract features from object, text. Well, text is a little bit different, actually. Is a sequence-to-sequence mechanism. But anyway, in the case of object, is able to extract features. So essentially, you take the object, you go to an abstract level of thinking, and then this abstract level of thinking that can be reapplied to other object, right, if they suit the abstract level or the abstract feature, let's say the shape of the apple, yeah? Is the shape of the apple can be kind of a feature or things like that. This is an abstract thing, as in it doesn't exist a shape on an apple. It just, again, is a feature. If you recognize that in another apple, even if it's purple, you will say still is an apple. Right. There is an abstract level of reasoning or extracting feature that is happening. By the way, in text, it's a little bit different, but definitely is the case for vision AI.
It reminds me of a famous quote from Mustafa Suleiman's book, The Coming Wave, which says, AI is what computers can do, and once they can, it's just software.
It is software.
Do you think we have reached the stage of general AI yet?
No, of course not. This is again is kind of a bad word. There are renowned statistical website or institution that ask all the expert in the field when generative AI will emerge or breakthrough. This time is, I think, it's early 30 at the moment, at the earliest, something like that, or 27 even, but let's say 2030 or something. So, but no, we are not there yet.
Andrea, you currently hold the position of Chief AI Officer, which is pretty new for many of us. What does this role like involve? Why it is becoming crucial for organizations to include this position in their organizational structures?
The more AI is adopted in businesses, the more you need to understand how to use it in a way that is obviously beneficial to the business and at the same time safe, good for the employees, and good obviously for the clients. To do that, you need a specialized knowledge, obviously, what AI is. Essentially, the role encompasses three aspects, four aspects actually. One is technology, you need to understand AI. Second, you need to understand governance and regulation, especially the one coming. Third, you need to understand the business, yeah, and return of investment and cost. And four, you need to understand how to train, adopt any technology, and what's, how easy it is to adopt the technologies. The combination of all these four elements is what I think is the chief AI officer. Essentially, first thing is to understand the business, how this business, is profitable and make money, how to make
Absolutely.
essentially the money.
Yeah. Basically, serve the strategic objectives of the company, business objectives.
But enabled by AI.
Which of the existing roles in our organizational structure can be like easy converted to a chief AI officer, in your opinion?
This is a good way. I think it will be an hybrid of the chief information officer or data officer, if someone has it, and the CTO is a hybrid. That's
How
why
about
it's neat.
CISOs, Chief Information Security Officers? What
Yeah, it's,
role?
yeah. Sorry, when I say information, I meant also information security
Ah.
officer. As an element of that, I would say the information security officer is still separate, but definitely, again, it's a hybrid. It's a hybrid position between the core technical infrastructure and AI and the data that allows that to work.
Right, makes total sense. On the other hand, the threat landscape is evolving dramatically, also thanks to AI. Can you mention some key emerging threats that AI is bringing to the forefront?
Yeah, so first of all, just to mention that every year, AI technologies, the company I work for, release every January a report called the State of AI Report, in which we discuss in length, first of all, what we call the catalyst, the event in the socio-economic background, and what AI will bring in the next 1 or 2 years. Yeah. At the moment, I think we are going to have a lot more of deep fakes. When I
Right.
say deep fakes, it's not just pictures or images or video, but also text. And the more we move it forward, they will be indistinguishable, yeah, from the real one. I give you, probably you heard in the news, Yona, I think it was in Singapore last week. So essentially, one guy pretended to be a CFO, chief
Exactly.
financial, yeah, of a large corporation in a video, exactly matching or almost exactly matching, the voice, etc., and made the accountant of the company transfer, I don't know how many million to another account.
$25 million
Yeah,
were
you knew
transferred.
better, yeah.
And it was very interesting because in this call, every member was deepfaked.
So just to finish on that, what we expected that we published in January, deepfake will be undistinguishable. What it means by that is, unfortunately and sadly, most of the software that started to get a little bit of traction as deep fake detection or text fake detection, they are going to fail.
What can we do, Andrea, to protect companies from...
I think it's more identification security, including everything, really. For example, I think, not that I want to advertise a specific company, but I think it's Google or DeepMind. They release Science ID, something like that, SYTH ID, which essentially take any picture, ingest, a pixel or a form of pixel that you cannot see, but it's kind of a barcode or something in embedded into the image. And therefore, that can be recognized as an ID into the picture. Essentially, ensure the picture you're seeing is actually legit, it's not being deepfake. So you need to do other stuff. So you need to authenticate any picture, anything, because if you rely on recognizing that, as in for shapes or for visual, you're going to fail.
And another suggestion is also to create a new code phrase for employees to know when requesting or carrying out financial transactions or personal mm-hmm. data, for example. Mm-hmm. And if the requester doesn't know the code, then obviously, you know, something is wrong.
It's authentication, right?
Absolutely.
It's all authentication. The only thing you can do is you cannot rely on detection, on fake detection or text detection. You cannot rely on that because it will be undistinguishable.
So all you can do. Late.
they're going to fail because they are exactly as the real one.
Organizations are currently facing also an increased risk from shadow IT tools. So we see employees more and more wanting to use those AI tools, which are popping up like mushrooms every day. Mm-hmm. But they want to use it on their own, often without being screened by IT or information security teams. So what advice do you have for companies to manage the shadow IT problem, which is influenced by AI?
In a nutshell, very quickly, you choose to put guidelines how to use this tool. Not necessarily exactly how to do it. That's why I call it guidelines. How to use AI tools. To me, they come in three categories, really. Which data put or not put into the AI? Yeah. If you're using ChatGPT, you shouldn't use confidential data of the organization. I mean, it seems obvious, but it's better to write it down. Yeah. In our guideline. The category is data to put or not to put into AI system. Yeah. The second is security around the application. If you want to use it, you should use certain security measure around it. And the third is assurance of the output.
Yeah.
So whenever you're using that, you should follow specific the line, etc. that actually check if the output you're using it has a certain standard or quality standard, etc. Obviously is application dependent or process dependent, but that's something you need to assure. You just put in taking the output as slamming in a report and solution, it's not going to be good.
In my experience, I've also realized that providing a white list of AI tools to be used could be also beneficial. So information security teams, together with other stakeholders like IT or tech teams, will identify and provide employees with the approved alternatives to those, let's say, popular AI tools that meet their needs while at the same time comply with company policies and security requirements.
Sure. That's a good idea too.
Andrea, if we want to get more involved in AI, not just as users, where should we start?
That's obviously depend on the on the level of the literacy at the level of knowledge of the person, or the person really. But I would say there are two ways at the moment. One, if you're already a software developer or you have a software development background and you want to get a little bit more on that, well, obviously the trivial suggestion, or not trivial, depending on, again, your level of knowledge, is to understand a little bit more, study a little bit more about neural network, essentially, the different layers, reinforcement learning and things like that, and study papers. You can maybe apply on Kaggle or things like that. If you're not technical, if you do not have a software development background, well, there is a new door opening up at the moment, yeah? A what he call what he goes to the name of prompt engineering, prompt stuff in general, yeah? Which means you do not need necessarily to have a good grasp of coding, things like that. But at least you need to have a good no low code understanding and a lot of I would say experience on using AI tools, yeah. So your job, if you want to put it like that, is really to use a lot of these AI tools, understanding what can do, cannot do, and understanding how you can ask questions or not questions or things like that. It's like the evolution. Have you ever about Zapier or Make?
Right. Yeah.
Or this
yeah.
Kind? Yeah. So essentially, let's see, it's a DevOps kind. At the moment, DevOps, so this kind of job, the integration solution like Make or Zapier, etc., and they integrate the workflow. Yeah. Now, the evolution, at least the evolution of the DevOps job, will be to include understanding of this generative AI tool with a prompt engineering and integrate that into, you know, the DevOps mechanism or workflow that they already have. So it's less technical from a software development perspective, but still you need to understand how to integrate these things in a workflow.
And it's also not related to machine learning or deep learning directly.
Not in the sense that you're just, in a way, you're just using it. So you do not need to understand, you know, why is it failing from a software perspective. But you still need to use it a lot because you need to be sure. Essentially, it's kind of a software testing position.
To understand the features and...
Yeah, it's a software testing position. You're prompting the need, you prompt a lot in the machine and see the reply is, etc. You do enough time to understand and to make sure that this thing behave as intended.
Considering the rapid advancement in AI technologies, what ethical considerations should companies prioritize to ensure that AI systems promote fairness, transparency, and accountability, especially in sensitive areas like data privacy and security?
Okay, so first of all, the AI in a business should have a return of investment of automation. Now, this return of investment should be partly eroded with an increase of security spending. The security spending is there to exactly allow accountability, fairness, transparency, essentially the data, data privacy of the users not being hacked, and the accuracy of the model is not being ingested by some cyber attack or things like that. So I would say the ethical consideration in practice means that you need to put assurance and or cybersecurity procedure tools, etc., to ensure that, you know, the data privacy, the data of your customer, and the fairness of that as much as you can is not being hacked, is not going to be hacked or ingested in any way or form. Obviously, it's a mitigation. It's a fallacy to say it's never been happened, but you can mitigate that.
And also transparency, I think, is very important, like providing users with clear information about how their data is collected, used, and shared, and offer options for controlling their privacy preferences and consent settings.
Yeah, sure. But that's you need to do it in regardless, I think, if you're using AI or not. I don't think there is a big distinction on that. The moment you collect the data, yeah, you may say you're using an AI model, sure, and then the supply chain, but you should say that anyway.
Yeah, absolutely true. How do you envision the future relationship between humans and AI in the cybersecurity domain? Are there any roles or tasks that should remain exclusively human? And if so, why?
Okay, so first of all, just to go straight to the point, the ultimate decision, in my opinion, at least in the next 3 to 5 years, at least, the ultimate decision in any kind of situation should be still human. The reasons are various, including the obvious one, which is hallucination or this model could go wrong or things like that. So we are not ready for that in any case. So no, at least again in the next 3 to 5 years, yeah. That's the first thing to say. The other aspect is we should understand that there is scarcities for many, but anyway, there is a secular trend. I mean, a trend that lasted decades, it will continue for decades, if not centuries, which is kind of an hybridization of AI with human, yeah. So essentially, we started with a personal computer, then the mobile phone, then nobody can live without a mobile phone. Then from there, we go to the, you know, a smartwatch, literally on your skin. And then now with video process, so essentially, we are hybridizing our assets. We are living in symbiosis with technology, yeah? Okay. The reason I say that, this is obviously reflect to the cybersecurity domain. So the way you put the questions in the relationship between AI and human, it will be very symbiotic in the future, increasingly so. But nevertheless, in cybersecurity, at this very moment in time, the thing that you can do automatically are definitely, apart from the things that are being done in the last few years, is ingesting a lot of data and understanding detection or remediation or things like that. That's kind of it done. What you're going to see in the next years is reinforcement learning based, something like that, bot. What do you mean for defense? Essentially, bot that can somehow get a defense, like shutting down a server when they see it's attacked, or reroute certain operation in the organization automatically. That's something you're going to see increase in the next years.
So all in all, it will be about collaboration and augmentation of human capabilities rather than replacing them.
Yeah, ultimately, yes, ultimately.
And I really like the idea that AI is good at automating tasks, not jobs.
Because
we are seeing people confusing this very much, and like also thinking about that AI will replace humans and they will take our jobs, you know.
No, of course, no. That's in by and large, it will not happen. Although, let's say in US, for example, there is a statistic that the largest job title, I mean, the workforce, if you divide the workforce in different job titles, the largest workforce is in admin work. Yeah. The problem is, if you think what the admin work is today, and you go back, I don't know, in the 60s, in the 60s, last century, there is still a lot of admin work, but the same title means completely different things. We didn't get rid of the admin.
Just transformed.
Yeah, I mean, the admin of today had no relationship of what the admin were doing in, I don't know, they were looking, you know, they were all paper-based, probably, actually, for sure. Now it's not, you know, it's completely, the same title means completely different things. It will mean completely different things in the future from what it is today.
Nevertheless, we are seeing companies nowadays firing people, especially those working in the content management or copywriting, which is pretty sad because obviously generative AI is directly impacting their area of responsibility. They might be more affected than the others. So we see clearly an effect in some job positions nowadays, but I think that might not be applicable to every job.
Of course, I agree with that. I mean, there will be, sadly, there are certain jobs that will be automated, but hey, there are other that will gonna be created. Of course, if you are in your 50s or even later in your life, it's a little bit difficult to retrain yourself in a different job. I get that. But by and large, no, we're not gonna have, you know, mass redundancies or things like that.
The new ISO 42001 standard for AI is coming out soon. So could you give us a sneak peek at the highlights of this standard, since you are also part of the ISO board for AI? So what is it all about? And will companies be able to get certified for specific AI products or for their AI practices and processes they have adopted?
Yeah, it depends on the policy they want to do. I'm sure your audience is familiar with ISO 27001 for the security, yeah? So the easiest way to put it is this is the equivalent of 27001 into AI, really. So the purpose of this is not to have something specific. Well, the specificity is up to the company, yeah? All the ISO work, including to 27001, you define your own procedure and risk assessment and things like that. And based on that, you align to the policy, the overall policy of the company.
Do you mean that the ISO 42001 will be an extension of ISO 27001?
No, it's not an extension. Is the framework is the same. Well, even do you know 9001, the quality one? Quality assurance. If you compare, forget about that for a second. Compare the 9001 with 27001. Somehow the structure is the same, right? There is an overall statement and policy. That's split into different procedure and sub-policies.
But the scope is different.
Yeah, the scope is absolutely. The scope is different, but the structure, the framework I use actually write and put that is kind of the same, right? So you have a register assessment. So think about in the same, it actually is in the same way. So you have a scope. So essentially you have a statement or a overall policy of the AI management system organization.
The normative part and so on, yeah.
Yeah, the scope of AI, and that's in general. Then you have policies on AI monitoring, what the accuracy should be in your organization. In your case, could be false positive ratio, is something more related to security, if you're using AI for security. And then you have your AI risk assessment, your AI risk impact assessment, the treatment, a policy for treatment when it goes wrong. And that is to be essentially put it together in your AI information system, management system, sorry.
I mean, there are some specific security domains such as change management, for example, or user management, system development, which do not make any difference whether it is an AI software or any other software. So that was my question, mainly related to those controls which are already stipulated in the ISO 27001. Will they be applicable for AI systems as well?
That's a good question. It depends on the actual policy. I think there will be an overlap of some sort. Yeah. Like probably there is today an overlap of some sort, again, from 9001, 27001. I'm sure in some of the quality procedure has to be written that, the security and the quality also depend on not being hijacked or whatever. And so for that, refer to your own policy or security, something like that. So there will be a certain overlapping of these two. But again, I would say it depends on the organization how to write and overlap the two in management systems and policies.
Looking ahead, what are the most exciting or promising developments in AI that you believe will revolutionize cybersecurity practices?
Okay, so again, I think the deepfake thing will pretty be hard on the market this year, the years to come, because I mean we are not prepared to see things that are indistinguishable by real thing. I don't think we are prepared at all. And
I mean, even for us that are working in the cybersecurity field, could be very, very difficult to spot deepfake nowadays.
No, it's impossible. The reason is twofold. Look, we are coming from an initial attempt of detection, deepfake detection, fake writing detection or things like that. How many of these things we heard in still today or in the past year? Now, first of all, AI, especially in writing, most of the time is still already there. I mean, you cannot, if you use one as a killbot or things like that, and you write something, you cannot understand this is written by AI. You cannot. So it's the mechanism we structure till today, as in we can spot it, we can do the detection. The assumption is unfortunately gonna fail. The assumption is failing, so that's changed everything. And so to me, in the next few years, that's the will be the more alarming thing. And on second, when I say second, it's not second or important, but second from a media attention, because I think the media attention will be in these things. But the other thing is about automatic bot on anything, really, even for attacking cyber, you know, attacking system, and for defense, we are gonna to see increasingly system that can adopt an attack, a system the other side that can automatically adopt a defense.
How about generative adversarial networks? They can be used to generate data for training AI models and testing cybersecurity defenses.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, these things, they are being used now together with the other approach, which is reinforcement learning. They're exactly used now to do what you're saying. Not only for testing, as you say, but actually to come up with either a good attack or an automatic good defense. But that's, again, in conjunction with what is called reinforcement learning.
Fantastic. Andrea, thank you so much for joining me on this episode and for your invaluable insights you shared. It's been a big pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you. Thank you, Yana.
Thank you for listening to CyberStar Talks podcast. If you like what you heard, please follow us, leave a review, and tune in monthly for the upcoming episodes.